no more place, there's no place more important than you could be than here this morning. And those of us that are a little older, want you to know that, take that seriously, and you're the future of the church, and the church needs you very much. So you want a police officer to talk about gun control. Really? Okay. Gun control is a very controversial issue in our country right now. And it's one of those issues that there's very few people in the middle. There's very little neutrality, I think, on this subject. And, if people had opinions, more opinions than on things than they do, we might be a better country instead of everybody, just so many people being in the middle. But because it's such a controversial issue, there are politics involved. It plays into politics. And I want you to know that as I prepared my remarks, I tried very hard to be impartial and not take any political side, just the Lord's side. And I think that's what we should all do, is what does God say about how we should live our life. So the first thing I want to do is I want to try to define this problem that we have, the best that I can do. I don't know that any of us can define or know all of the problems, but I think we can look at it fairly, and then we'll look at the only real solution that there is. I know what that is. Gun control has been a very controversial issue in our country for several years, because there's an extremely small number of people who decide to take the lives of other people with a firearm. Firearms have been a part of this country since before it was formed, as John Morris gave us a little history lesson yesterday, which was very good. In fact, if our forefathers didn't have firearms, we would never have gained our freedom from England. It took a war, bloodshed, courage, and the lives of many who wanted religious freedoms and other freedoms to gain the independence that you and I have to sit in this building today. And we still don't have to worry about anybody coming in the building. Not yet, anyhow, do we? It's taken many more wars and bloodshed, courage, and lives to keep that freedom. You don't just get it and then you have it forever. You have to continually fight for it, because there's people continually wanting to take it away from you. And one of the problems that we have is we have had more than one generation now that doesn't really understand that. And that needs to be taught. So why are we seeing these mass murders now? Why are we seeing these school shootings? Why do we see people go into places that are crowded and take the lives of other people? Why are we seeing that more now in this country than we have in the past? And I say this country, because that's nothing really new. If you think that one person or a small group of people that take the lives of many people is new, it's certainly not. In fact, this is not new to mankind since Cain killed Abel. Why did God destroy the earth with the flood? Because the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the earth was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. That's Genesis 6, 5, and verses 11. It was horrible. It was terrible. It was violent. It wasn't just sin, it was violence. If men don't use firearms to kill people, they will use other methods, such as starvation, bombs, poison the water, food, or the air supply. That's how you can really take out masses of people. They'll fly airplanes into buildings. Now we're seeing cyber crimes, and that disrupts, that can disrupt governments and so on and so forth. I think it's fairly well understood the United States just was able recently to get into Iran's cyber system and delay at least their attempts to create nuclear weapons. But they're overcoming that. But you know, genocide has happened in countless nations we will never know about. Joseph Stalin killed 20 million of his own Russians. That makes Adolf Hitler look kind of small, doesn't it? Gaddafi, the terrorist from Libya, how many people did he take out? Mao Zedong in China. And now we see this Bashar al-Assad, who is murdering his own people in Syria with his army. And, you know, there's several countries right now you could look at that are committing genocide, the rulers of those countries, or groups in the country. So when we think about a person or a small group of people taking the lives of many people, it's not new. So we should not think just because it's happening here and now is something new. It's not. There are all kinds of people who have no business with a firearm. I'll tell you that right up front. I honestly believe that. Criminals, there's people who are mentally ill, there are fugitives, and by that I mean a person who's fleeing prosecution from the law. There's people that have displayed certain types of violence towards others. There's a list of people you could make that you would not want with a firearm. We are all subject to the laws of the United States because we live here. And all of our laws originated with the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution. So any time a person in that Constitution, the Second Amendment, allows for each of us to have firearms if we're not some person who's prohibited, some of those that I just talked about. But there are people who should be prohibited, and if that is the case, there must be a lawful denial of their right to have a firearm. You're probably, some of you that may not know me very good may wonder, well, what makes you an authority? Well, I'm not saying I'm an authority. But just a little bit of background. I was a state trooper for 30 years, and 20 of that was in criminal investigations, all the way from drugs to homicides. I was assigned for 5 years to ATF, a federal organization, where I did nothing but make illegal firearms cases on individuals. Individuals that were prohibited, or someone who was not prohibited but had an illegal firearm, sawed-off shotgun, fully automatic, such as that. So I tell you that to make this statement. I am convinced that we have 10 times more laws on the books than we need concerning firearms. And the reason for that is the ones that we have largely are not enforced. They're just not enforced for various reasons. In 2010, three years ago, there was over 15,000 convicted felons and fugitives in the United States that are banned from buying guns who tried to buy one. And they were stopped by background checks. And that's a good deal. That's very good. This is according to U.S. Senator Ted Cruz from Texas. That's good that 15,000 people were stopped of getting one. Guess how many were prosecuted? 44. 44 people. That's 0.002%. So, does it, you know, when we have these incidents, does it solve a problem just to make more laws after each shooting? You know, the recent one we just had was it Connecticut? The school shooting in Connecticut, does it fix it just to make more laws? The legislator can then say, well, we passed a law. Well, you know, that shows that man can only do a very little bit. Man's laws can only prevent or punish a very minute group of people. Because if a person wants to do evil, they can do evil. That's the bottom line. So let's try to answer a question. Why are these mass shootings occurring, and what's the root of this problem? Well, for one thing, I think you will agree with me that these things have become very popular because of media coverage. When something like this happens, the media trucks descend on these places. They'll be lined up down the street. They'll have a circle around the school or the theater or wherever it is, wherever this has happened. And it's a zoo because it's news and it sells. And we as people want to know. Well, there's nothing wrong with wanting to know, but I think we carry it far too far in this country. And what that does, it gives people, criminals, unstable peoples, who, it gives them an insurance that if they want to leave this life, they can do it with everybody watching. I've been so dysfunctional in my life. I've never accomplished anything. I've never been successful at anything. And I want to leave. I want out of this life. How am I going to do this? Well, some do what we call suicide by cop. And they'll take a gun. Sometimes it's unloaded. Sometimes it's loaded. I worked one where right there in Ozark, guy had a loaded gun, and he was shooting inside his house. His wife called the police. He wasn't shooting at her. He was shooting inside the house. Called the police. They responded. He came to the front door. They were around the house. And he just started shooting in the ground in front of the house. But he was aiming in a general direction. He was shot and killed. He had no intention of hurting an officer, but he wanted to die. Okay? If you want someone to watch you, if these people want someone to watch them, if you want them to read your manifesto that you leave behind, you can do it. Because death is about the only way still left to shock this sinful world, isn't it? There may be a few other ways, but it's guaranteed that you can shock people. You can get somebody's attention for 15 seconds if you want to. That's the path that some people choose, and usually this includes their own cowardly suicide at the end. Here's the root of all the problems of mass shootings and all other sin, not just shootings, all sin. John used my scripture yesterday, but Jeremiah said, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it?" Why at some point in our life does every young child naturally desire to do the wrong thing? It doesn't mean they do it and continue to do it, but we all have that urge in our lives when we're young and sometimes when we're older. Well, it's because of Satan. Satan's the father of all lies and wickedness. That's the root of the problem. I think we would all agree with that. But I've been asked to talk about some of the specific things. What are some of the specific things? Well, I don't have all the answers, but I think we all know some of them. Things that contribute to these, both legal and illegal drugs. You know, we're in a culture, and it's because of greed, I believe, that the drug industry pushes drugs on us like never before. Take this drug, take that drug, and if these five drugs don't work, we got two more for you. If you combine them all, maybe that'll work, but maybe not. That is an industry, brothers and sisters. Alcohol, domestic problems with the husband and wife or boyfriend, girlfriend. And I think one of the huge contributing factors to these shootings and sin in general are broken marriages and the lack of discipline in the home by the parents. You know, if you use violence and you get away with it, it becomes addictive because you see very quickly it gives you power. Now, who wouldn't think power is not addictive? It is. We see it all around us. And any parent that thinks violent video games on their child's computer or their kids being involved on the street in some act is just kids being kids and thinking it's not going to have a problem, it's not going to affect them, I believe the parents are the ones that have the problem. I honestly do. Let's not deceive ourselves. Let's stay on top of things. You know, get that filter on your computer. Watch your kids. Pay attention to what they're doing. Yes, they're good kids, but can they be led astray? Satan wants their mind, and we need to want it more. Fathers, be a strong leader of your family, both physically and spiritually. Mothers, be loving and caring. You know, if parents are worried that their kids will get mad at them and throw a fit because they don't get to watch some violent show on television, or have the wrong friends on Facebook, or wear their thumbs out texting endless, mindless trash talk on the internet, I think the parents, again, are the ones with the problems. Be involved in your child's life. Yeah, they're going to get mad at you if you're a Christian parent. Our kids are going to get mad at us from time to time. But you know what? They're going to get over it. What they're not going to get over is if we don't care enough to correct them. That's what they're not going to get over, if we lose them. Ephesians 6 and 4 tells fathers not to provoke their children to wrath. It's easy for us dads to make our kids mad. I know that firsthand. Jay knows that. The wives, the women are more loving and caring generally than a man. And it's easier for us as men to say, do it. And here's why. And I expect it to be done. And I'm very guilty of that. But Ephesians 6 and 4 doesn't mean I better not correct him or say anything to her because they might get mad at me. That's not what it means at all about provoking them to wrath. It means don't correct out of retaliation. Don't do things to make your children angry just because you're the boss and you can. It means do it in love and realize that if your child bites back at you, they're still a child. They're still your child. The Apostle John said the whole world lies under the sway of the wicked one in 1 John 5 and 19. That's the root of all of our evil, the wicked one. God created the universe and the earth within the universe, but the control of the vast majority of mankind's minds is owned by Satan. This is his world. That's how he could promise Christ when he had Christ and he tempted Christ after 40 days of fasting. He promised Christ all the kingdoms of the world. I used to think, well, that's not his world. He can't do that. Well, yeah, God created the world, but Satan rules it. Satan tried to tempt Christ in that manner, as in Matthew 4. And in Matthew 7 and 14, Christ said, "Narrow is the gate and difficult is the way which leads to life, and few there are that find it." Satan's got control of most people and will take them with him. But there's a few that stand against him. We have to understand the only real solution to the problem of violence with or without guns and all other crimes are not the laws of man. They're God's laws and his principles of truth. Every single problem of man can be solved if we keep the two great commandments. Love the Lord our God with our heart, soul, and mind, and love our neighbor as ourself. Matthew 22, 37 through 40, when Jesus reiterated those commandments in the New Testament. But can man's laws help? Of course they can. Yes, our laws can help. That's why God instituted civil government, so we wouldn't have anarchy in the world, which we do have in places, but we have civilization here. God wants us to have order in our lives. They'll have a dramatic impact for good if they're the right laws and if justice is carried out swiftly. And I think we can say for the most part in the first couple hundred years, at least, of this nation, they were. We had good laws. Laws were carried out much faster than they are today. The problem is our legal system, thanks to the evil mind of man, is now so polluted that real justice is almost impossible to find. I've got two guys still sitting on death row. One of them murdered a 12-year-old girl, and his sentence was overturned, not his verdict. He got the death penalty, but he's only going to have to serve life. The other one is still sitting there for murdering a police officer. It's been almost 20 years on both of them. Is that swift justice? They were found guilty by a jury of their peers. Is there anything swift and fast about that? Artaxerxes, the king of Persia in Ezra's time, and by the way, Artaxerxes was not a God-fearing king, he told Ezra in chapter 7, verse 26. Whoever will not observe the law of your God and the law of the king, that's God's law and man's law, let judgment be executed speedily on him, whether it be death or banishment or confiscation of goods or imprisonment. So, and Solomon said in Ecclesiastes 8 and 11, because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. You want street talk for that? Hey, nothing's going to happen to me. Why should I be afraid of the law? I'm not going to go to prison. If I do, I've been there before. I'll be out in 3 months. So how do we obey 1 Timothy 2, 1, 1 and 2? Let me read that. Paul told Timothy, therefore I exhort first of all that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings and all who are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and reverence. I got to tell you, I struggled with this passage for a long time. We discussed it at Ozark quite a bit. I think I've really finally come to a good understanding of this. Does anybody know what happened on January 22nd, 1973 on a national scale? You all know, you just don't remember the date. Are we to pray that the United States government, who said on January 22nd, 1973, that it's okay to murder unborn babies, should I pray that that continues? Should I pray that the current political administration, which is on record supporting homosexuality, should prosper and thrive in this action? Should I pray that that's successful? Of course not. If we pray for the success of sinful people, their sinful actions, we're taking part in that. Of course we're not to pray for that. We are to pray for leaders, but we are to pray, as the key is in the last part of verse 2, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and reverence. Yes, God set specific people in ruling position, kings and others, warriors, to wipe out nations and to punish his nation, and vice versa. Does God set a specific person in a specific office today? Personally, I don't think so. I mean, that's up for debate, probably. But I think we would all agree that rule and authority is endorsed by God. And we are to be subject to the government. Let's look at Romans, the 13th chapter. I know you all know this, but let me just read 13, 1 through 4. Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. Now, verse 3 and 4. I struggled with them too. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be afraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is God's minister and avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. There's a lot of good police officers. There are some good politicians. I say some. It seems the higher you go, the more corrupt it becomes. But, you know, was Nebuchadnezzar... Was he a good ruler? Was he a terror to good works? Yes, he was. He told Daniel, you're not going to pray. What'd Daniel do? He prayed 3 times a day. He told Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you're going to bow down to this image of gold that I've set up, or I'm going to throw you in the fire. Did they obey? No, they did not. Because it conflicts with God's laws. So how do we understand verse 3, when it says, rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil? Does that mean that all rulers are good? No, it does not. When the rulers of Muslim countries have decreed the practice of Christianity, this is going on now in Afghanistan, Iraq, some other countries, when they say it's against our law for you to be a Christian, if we catch you, we're going to behead you or burn you alive in your church buildings, isn't that a terror to good works? Jesus told the Pharisees to obey Caesar. So let me qualify that. He said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. But they were to obey Caesar as long as he didn't do anything, as long as they could be a Christian. But yet Caesar and rulers who followed him murdered, tortured, and made sport of murdering Christians. I think these verses are talking about God-fearing rulers. It doesn't mean that they're Christians, but they allow Christians to practice Christianity. We can still be a Christian. So even if we have evil rulers, we are to obey their laws if they don't keep us from keeping God's law. The Humane Society of the United States and PETA, the People for the Equitable Treatment of Animals, are trying to get all animal meat for human consumption banned. I don't know if you know that about HSUS. They run very deceiving and tear-jerking ads on television. I'm sure you've seen some of them. A puppy with these big eyes and they're, or a cat, and they're so frail and helpless, and they try to put you on a guilt trip if you don't send money. Do your homework on the internet on these organizations. Humane Society of the United States, over 90% of their proceeds go to celebrities in Hollywood. They spend about 1% on animals. It's a huge con game. But here's why I'm saying that. Many legislators are trying to take away all firearms for United States citizens. They want my steak, and they want my guns. Okay? Those are very important to me. And probably you too. They're very important to me. But you know what? I can still be a Christian without them. I don't have to eat steak. I don't have to have a gun to be a Christian. God told Noah and Peter that all meat was good for human consumption, didn't he? But you know what? He didn't tell them they had to eat meat. And apparently Noah had not eaten meat for 601 years until after the flood. And I don't know if he ate meat after the flood or not, but God told him that he could. Homosexuals are on an aggressive path right now, trying to impose their will on schools, churches, the legislature, and the Supreme Court this last week. It's going to happen. It's not just a one-time, we're bringing it to the people. It is a concerted, organized effort with money behind it. It's going to happen. And, that's my viewpoint on it. But I think if you think about it and see how it just keeps growing, you will see that. Muslims try to force their radical views and other people on all that do not agree with them. These are things that I do not tolerate and I will not tolerate in my life as a Christian or my family's life or anyone I have influence on as a Christian, because they do keep us from serving God if we were to practice them. Now God does not hate homosexuals. He doesn't hate Muslims. He doesn't hate a murderer with a fully automatic AK-47 or any other sinful person. After all, we know sin will keep us out of heaven. God didn't define what sin it was, did he? God does not hate these people, or you or I, when we sin, but he does hate our evil deeds. He does love our soul, and because he created it, and Christ gave his life for it. And that's bottom line. We must have the same caring attitude for these people that we have discussed, the same as God does if we're to be acceptable to him. Romans 12 and 18 says, if it's possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. And as Keith said yesterday, you know, the message that we bring largely will be rejected. Even presented the right way, largely it's rejected. They rejected Christ. Yet there will be a few that will accept. We don't know who they are, but it's our job to sow the seed. We're told in James 3 and 18 that the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. We're not on a war path, but we are on the righteous path. And we're to sow the seeds as we go. So what are we going to do about it all? Well, our feeble minds are not going to be able to define all the problems of the wicked world. And even if we could understand them, how could we solve them? Could we produce a solution? No. Even if we were smart enough, it's been proven, and it continues to be proven, that people will do whatever they want to do. If it's good, they're going to do good. If it's bad, they're going to do bad. God gives us that choice. But there really is some good news. I know this has probably been a fairly depressing lesson, and I apologize for that. But, you know, those of you that know what I'm talking about are grown adults, and you understand. You know, we're in a battle. We're in a war. And it's becoming more and more defined. The good news is the gospel of Jesus Christ. The world may lie under the sway of the wicked one, but he doesn't have control of my mind. How about yours? Make up your mind that you will follow Christ and you will do the right thing. Thanks be to God who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. 1 Corinthians 15 and 57. We are guaranteed to win. Now who can say that in the world? Any game you undertake, any business venture or job that you undertake, can you guarantee before you start or while you're engaged in it that you're going to win? No. But God gives us that assurance, and we have that guarantee we will have a victory through Jesus Christ, because God proved that he was his son when he raised him from the dead. If Satan had been able to keep Christ from resurrecting, we would have been lost. But that didn't happen because of Christ's obedience and God's promise. Mankind continues to become more corrupt throughout the entire world as it did before the flood. And is our nation, and I say this, I'll just say it. Is our nation the last God-fearing nation to exist? And as John said, is it even a God-fearing nation? I'm not really sure. But I believe that for many years it did seek God. As a whole, the nation sought God. People seem to want God in their lives more than they did at this present time. Has God had just about enough? Well, those are questions that we all have to answer in our own mind. But I want us to think this morning and realize that whether it's the problem of weapons, guns, whether it's the problem of pornography, violence, you name it, we must do our part with God. We must make absolutely sure that our families are raised the way they should be raised. Who do we have the most impact on? Is it somebody we don't know outside the building here? Or is it our family? We need to take care of first things first. And by doing that, we go a large way to reach people that we don't know. Serious stuff. We're going to change gears in just a few minutes. We're going to put all these earthly problems out of our mind. Because we're going to do something very, very important. We're not going to be thinking about earthly problems, earthly pleasures. We're going to remember the death of Christ, our Savior. And so, even though I have hopefully provoked you to think this morning, and we've been on this thought of current events in our lives, we're going to change that here in a few minutes. I want to help you change your thought process here in just a second. And we're going to remember Christ's death. And no matter how serious we think our daily issues may be, let's all remember that Christ died as a ransom to solve all those problems. And we, by serving him and by remembering his death and keeping his commandments, doing what he wants us to do, we will ensure we will overcome all the problems of this life.